Well, hello there, good people of the internet and the MMA world.
Scared me, bro. I can't hear the music, so you gotta...
Well, you were rolling the blood. I couldn't give you, like, a visual cue either. We're back over the phone, baby.
Episode 2 of Phone Life.
Yeah, it's episode 108 as well.
I kind of like doing it over the phone because I don't hear your little, like, burps as much.
Because I ain't been drinking.
You're not drinking tonight, though, right?
We'll see what happens later. It's only, what, 6 o'clock? But we are out here. We are back. Yeah, I also like not having to lug up everything in my backpacks, so...
That is cool. That is cool.
Maybe this is a new wave, but... So, the first ever quarantine fight card went down pretty much without a hitch.
Second quarantine fight card.
Well...
Count Brazil, bro.
Yeah, it was no crowd, but we still weren't in, like, this, like, global pandemic mode like we are now.
I mean, we were getting there.
We were getting there.
It was the, that was the first one. Give it its respect.
But this one, like, not even Joe, DC, and John, they had all separate tables spread out around the ring. It was really weird, but I liked it.
It honestly wasn't that bad. I mean, they made it work just as I expected they would. You know, I figured... with the time of preparation they had, they'd come away with a good process for the production.
Yeah.
So I think it went really well.
Same. And we only had one fight get canceled.
Yeah, which was a big scare, dude.
Big scare. I don't like that at all. Jacare Souza tested positive, what was that, Saturday morning?
Yeah, it was like right after the weigh-ins, right?
It was either Friday night or Saturday morning, but his results came back from earlier in the week. He did test positive. He had alerted them that he did have a family member that was that he had came in contact with who he knew had had the virus. So they kind of kept him on like an extra lockdown compared to the other fighters just to, until his test came back. Because
right,
I think
yeah.
It takes like a week or something.
He was the also the only fighter, well, other than Uriah Hall, but that was the only face-off where both fighters wore masks and they actually had the furthest distance apart from
each
other.
Yeah, and neither touched Dana. Or Uriah might have. I think Uriah fist-bumped him, but Jacare did not.
Right.
Crazy.
So, yeah, that was a scary way to get it started. As soon as it happened, I was thinking, oh, no, here we go. They're going to cancel it all.
Shut this whole shit down!
But luckily, everything went pretty swimmingly, actually, and... there were really no hiccups other than that, I'd say.
Yeah, I thought so.
The one thing I do want to comment on once the fight started, I think it's a little odd that they can hear the commentators. I think they might need to do something about that.
What do you do? Put them up in the stands?
Put them up somewhere, yes. Put them up somewhere where they can't. Put them in a booth or something, you know, get a booth made or something just where, I don't know. I don't like the fact that they can hear the commentators. I think that puts a little added pressure on them. They're listening to the corner man. They hear the commentators. You know, it's I think it puts a little bit of a mark on it.
I mean, they can hear the other corner too.
Right. Yeah.
So if dude says, hey, throw a right, dude knows, oh, the right's coming.
Yeah, I guess it's just a thing, but I don't know.
Well, I guess we got like 5 more of these in this kind of setup in Jacksonville, so I guess we might be seeing that more often. Fighters are taking coaches' advice. Apparently, several fighters, Greg Hardy especially, said that he heard Cormier talking about what Greg needs to do, and he did it.
Right.
He was like, it was like I had an extra coach in my ear.
Right.
So.
And then also in news today, it came out that Kelvin Gastelum had failed a drug test for marijuana for the second time.
Yeah, back during his Darren Till fight. Apparently, he had to go through some treatment program, and his suspension was reduced from 9 months to 4. So he's already back eligible to fight because the suspension was retroactive back to November. So he's already good to get back in there at any time now. But I just can't believe we're still doing this.
I mean, the NFL's on board. I'm sure the MLB and the NBA won't be far behind. It's only a matter of time before it's allowed.
What, NFL don't test for weed?
No, not anymore. I mean,
what about in competition?
You can only have, yeah, in competition, you can only have a certain amount in your system, but it's like a lot more than what it used to be. Like, it's basically, you know, like you're allowed to have a little weed
as a treat.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, shit.
So yeah, that happened, and then today, Conor McGregor, the Notorious, decided to go on an absolute tirade on Twitter.
Let's get into that after the fight card.
Oh, you don't want to get into it right now?
We'll do it after the card.
I mean, we're already doing news, but all right.
All right, fuck it, we'll do it now. All right, so I got all his tweets here. I don't know if any of these were deleted. I just have a screenshot of what someone else posted. So these are all different tweets. So Connor says,
read them in order, though.
I will. The fans make the sport. Watching the other night, I was against going in without them, but it will be my fucking pleasure to display the power I possess with zero background noise for them. It's me and Justin next, as Khabib is the biggest bottle fighter in the game. Guarantee it. Next tweet. I love Tony. We represented him amazing.
With a little more Irish in it, please.
I love Tony. I love Tony. We represented him amazingly at Paradigm Sports, and were betrayed for a promise of a baseball contract. But the frame and preparation here was just embarrassing. His methods and conversation are humorous, enjoyable, but he was never the level perceived, although tough. Next tweet. It's Dustin and Tony next when Tony heals. If he does, Dustin will be him. Also, if changes are not made, which they won't, Dustin, although game and in the mix, will be fed to the floor again. Couple wins here, there, then folded in half, rinse and repeat. Dustin's career. I was like, damn, man. Going at his neck. Justin, there's no danger in a man that hugs legs. We all know. Try and dance around what the real threat is here all you want. I'm going to fucking butcher you, your teeth. I'm going to put them on a fucking necklace. Speak on my skills as a father. You are fucking dead. Three more. Don't ever say you represent the great nation of the United States of America ever again. No true American would speak so highly of or allow a convicted member of a jihadi terror cell represent them. Never forget, you are a fucking blind fool, and I'm going to finish the job. And Khabib, you absolute embarrassment, scurrying, hiding rat as usual, as I've said many times, as has been seen many times, through the pane of glass, it was confirmed that was always known. No comment, LOL, as embarrassing to real fighting. And then last thing he said was, after this division demolition job, it is 170 pounds. So, what made him take off like that?
I don't know. What do you see that in between, you know, like, didn't he tweet right after the fights or something? I know right before him, he was tweeting all like, oh, good luck to my fellow colleagues, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then just rips him in half.
I don't know what he saw or what made him freak out like that. But that was a lot.
Yeah. Apparently Connor's on some shit.
Well, I think it was because Ali Dalaziz, or however you say his name, he came out and said, like, no, it's Justin and Khabib. Like, that's it. The two dudes are going to fight. And those are both under his management. So I think he feels like that's, like he's got more push. The Justin Khabib fight has more legs than a Conor and Khabib fight at this point, because they're both managed by Ali.
Makes sense.
That's speculation, but, you know. This is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only news I got.
Yeah, that's really it. They announced... Didn't they just announce Amanda Nunes and Felicia Spencer, or was that already, like, super confirmed?
Yeah, UFC 250, I think June. Sometime in June.
Yeah, I think June 9th. Or something like that.
And I think they're working on Tyron Woodley versus Gilbert Burns for May 23rd. Also in Jacksonville.
That'd be a good one.
I like that a lot.
I like that fight a lot, too.
Poor Leon, man.
Right. Getting the Tony end of the stick.
Big time. So.
Let's get into UFC 249.
Yeah. So we have 3 disagreements on this card.
Yeah.
I thought it went off pretty well just watching it.
I was fired.
Super into
top
it
top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, every punch thrown, every takedown landed, I was in my room just like, oh. It was great. I'm glad we're back.
Yeah, it was great, dude.
We got two more this week. Oh my god.
I know. Yeah, so after we review this fight card, we do got another one to preview for you guys. That'll be happening in 2 days. So weigh-ins are tomorrow. That'll be on Wednesday. So me and Slim got to get our picks to you guys tonight so you can get your little bets in, do what you got to do for that. And, yeah, let's get into UFC 249 that took place in Jacksonville, Florida at the Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena.
On this card, there were 6 decisions, 3 unanimous, 3 split, and 5 KO/DKOs.
Yeah. All right, so getting into the very first fight of the night.
So I want to apologize to Sam Alvey. I said that.
You do owe him an apology.
I do owe him an apology. The veteran of the sport that he is, I thought Span was going to be on another level. That was not the case. Alvey, his counterpunching is just off the charts.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he was catching Span coming in every time.
It's slow, but when it hits, it's hard.
He's got power.
He's accurate with it.
Yeah. So Ryan Spann, this was – so that, as the first fight of the night, you know, this without a crowd thing, I think there was even less people in the arena, like, even working for the UFC than for the Brazil card. And with this without a crowd thing was, like, Ryan was talking to his coaches. He was just going, like, I hear you, coach.
Yep.
It was weird. That was real weird. But anyway.
Yeah.
Ryan
Spann – yeah, that kind of set the tone with the weirdness of having – you know, nobody, no crowd there, being able to hear that kind of stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
that kind of showed immediately. It was going to be like, all right, it's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah. So first round, Ryan Spann gets this crazy standing arm triangle on Sam Alvey, and Sam Alvey's face starts turning as red as his hair.
You can hear him like.
Yeah. And then he gave the ref a smile, and we were like, oh, he's fine.
Yeah.
And got out of it. And then, like I said, the counterpunching for Sam was just on point. When they would get into flurries, Sam usually came out on top. His chin withstood everything Spann threw at him. And unfortunately, he just wasn't active enough to get the decision in my eyes, even though one judge did have it his way. I still think Ryan Spann won the fight.
Yeah, I personally had it 29-28 in favor of Spann. I definitely think he slowed down that second round.
Yeah.
But the first round, he secured it with those, I believe it was 2 takedowns, and then the third round he came out and just used enough pressure and volume to get himself to win.
But at the end of the third round,
I definitely saw it 29-28.
Fucking Dalby almost got him.
Oh yeah, he was gassed. Span was gassed.
Yeah.
He definitely has to work on that gas tank because I mean he was spent. Those last, I think it was. I mean it was like the last
spent.
Minute. But yeah, that moved Slim and I to 1-0 on the night. We did pretty good there. I like that one.
Yeah. In this next fight, oh my god, Bryce Mitchell went up against Charles Rosa. We talked about this one like it was going to be pretty even and it was going to be a really hard test for Bryce Mitchell. Bro, do not go to the ground with Bryce Mitchell.
Absolutely not. I mean, the way he was just immediately getting the fight to the ground and just syncing up these submission holds against a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. It was amazing.
How many times did he go for the twister? 4?
It was like 4 or 5 times. He almost got it.
Like, and what? And he was just going from arm triangle, left side, right side. Go ahead, roll over. I'll take your back leg. Charles Rosa had no answer for anything.
Dude,
that Bryce
it was absolutely amazing. I mean, the offense. I mean, to Charles Rosa's credit, he had good defense. He was getting out of these really, really dangerous positions. But, man, just
he couldn't, he could not get to back to his feet.
And Bryce, I don't even think Bryce Mitchell's a black belt, is he?
I don't know. Let me see.
Like, dude, it's just crazy. I mean, Charles Rosa is a legitimate black belt. He was getting dominated with submissions.
Right.
He didn't get submitted, but it was very, very close. A lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's a black belt or not.
They started talking shit towards the end of the fight. Rosa was telling Bryce Mitchell to stand up. And it was getting a little bit heated, but they ended up shaking it off. And then, apparently, the story goes, Dana White and I forget who else it was. I think it's the designer for Reebok or something like that, actually texted Bryce Mitchell's agent, I believe it was, right? Or his manager.
Yeah.
And asked what kind of camo Bryce likes. So he's getting the shorts.
He did it.
He is finally getting the camo shorts, dude.
Four dubs.
The first customized UFC shorts goes to Bryce Mitchell. That's hard.
Four dubs.
That's hard. Bro.
Four decisive dubs. I'm so happy with this kid. Is he our age?
Something like that.
Let me see.
We're not young anymore, Slim. It's not impressive.
Yeah, 25.
If they were our age, that's not
impressive. I mean, we're young enough that, like, you know.
Not really.
All right. So, Thug Nasty, I don't think he's ready for a ranked opponent yet. Charles was a pretty big step up in competition, but, dude, fucking give him someone good. Cause
yeah, he's getting up there.
He's got it.
Somebody on the cusp of a... of a ranking, I think Bryce Mitchell and them need to duke it out.
I definitely want to see him in the striking. I want to see what he does with someone who has some takedown defense.
Right.
But, you know, fucking Bryce Mitchell, man.
Yeah, definitely a beast.
I don't know how Bryce didn't get performance of the night.
So Bryce Mitchell ended up defeating Charles Rosa. Bryce Mitchell is now 13-0 overall, 4-0 in the UFC. He has earned three of his four UFC victories by decision. And then Charles Rosa, 12-4 now overall, 3-4 in the UFC. He has alternated wins and losses over his past eight fights, and he has suffered three of his four career losses by decision. And that takes Slim and I to 2-0 on the night.
Yeah.
And then I'm sorry, that was your early preliminary card on ESPN, which takes us to the preliminary card on ESPN and up to the welterweight division, where we had our very first disagreement of the night. Who do we have?
We have Vicente Luque going up against the hybrid Nico Price. I thought this would play out more similar to their last fight, but it really didn't. Nico showed some great stand-up, much improved than the first outing. The takedown defense was on point, and yeah, man, it's just, it was more of like Vicente was like the controlled technical boxer, kickboxer, and Nico was just throwing them things.
Right.
But he was hitting. He was finding the target.
He was. He was. But we know Vicente's got a crazy chin on him, and he hasn't been knocked out before, so we knew it was going to take something crazy to get Vicente out of there. Unfortunately for Nico, he wasn't able to land anything, but what a hell of a performance by these two. This one was very, very close to being fight of the night. I mean, if it wasn't the Ferguson and Gaethje fight, it would have been this one for sure.
Also, so, for some reason, they had one ring girl.
I mean, might as well just have one, right? What, you think they should have had more?
No, but she didn't even make a lap. She just held the card up by the where she walked up to the top and then
just
put
had
it back
to
down.
Look good for the TV, bro. Just had to get the card on the TV. That's all.
Yeah, you're right.
She's going to do a lot of work. She probably got a little pay cut, too. She wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, maybe.
Give Brittany Palmer her respect, sir.
You got it. No, she's a goat for going in there. Nico Price actually outlanding Vicente Luque by 14 shots. They threw a combined 174 shots. Wow. Or 274.
The damage was just adding up on Nico by the third round, man. He was cut up, and then by the end of the fight, man, that eye was just brutal. You could barely even tell where his eyeball was because
he had cuts underneath, cuts over top. He had when you look at his pictures from the day after, he had three different cuts that had to get stitched up.
Absolutely brutal, man. Vicente Luque is a terrorizer in the octagon. So that takes Vicente Luque's record to 18-7-1 overall. He's now 11-3 in the UFC. He has earned 16 of his 18 career victories by stoppage now, which includes 10 of his 11 UFC wins. That is nuts. And his 10 stoppage victories since 2015 in the welterweight division is the most in the division during that span. Also, those 10 stoppage victories in UFC welterweight competition history is tied for third most behind Matt Brown and Matt Hughes.
Wow.
And then Nico Price, on the other hand, 14-4 overall, 6-4 in the UFC. He has alternated wins and losses over his past six fights, And then all four of his career losses have now came by stoppage. Killer be killed, Nico Price. So that takes Slim to 3-0 on the night, and I am now 2-1.
Nice.
We go to the women's strawweight division, and a controversial scorecard, and probably the most boring fight of the night. Not probably, definitely the most boring fight of the night.
Yeah, we had Carla Esparza going up against Michelle Waterson. I thought Michelle was going to engage a lot more than she did. I thought she was going to use her range because she said, you know, she wasn't worried about the takedowns, and she's good on the ground as well. But it looked like she was just kind of scared of Esparza the whole time. However, I do
she
think
just didn't throw.
Well, she I think when she threw, it was more impactful than what Carla threw, like big head kicks, big leg kicks, like those were nice. I just think she needed to be more active.
Yeah, absolutely. She needed way more activity if she wanted to win that fight. I understand that she was mad about the scorecard. You know, it was one of those weird fights where one judge had it 30-27 for one fighter, one judge had it 30-27 for the other.
Which you never want to see.
Yeah, it was a hard fight to call. But in the end, I agreed. I thought Carla Esparza won. I thought she threw enough strikes and had enough activity to get the win in this one.
Once I heard that 30-27 from Michelle, I was like, oh, shit, she got this. And then, no.
Yeah, definitely a weird scorecard there. But it was just one of those fights, man. It was just really weird. There weren't too many big moments for either fighter. You know, round in, round out, it's kind of hard to decipher who had won. So, you know, I was figuring we'd get a split decision. I didn't think it'd be something like that. But, yeah. Nonetheless, that takes Slim and I'm sorry, I'm 2-2 on the night, and then Slim is now 3-1.
Yuzzer.
And that takes us to the heavyweight division for the first time of the night.
Who saw this coming? Alexei Oleinik going up against Fabricio Werdum, 42 or 43-year-olds. And oh my god, dude, first round, Alexei was throwing them things.
Throwing them things. I was not expecting
Fabricio
that at all.
Did Fabricio not look like himself.
He looked sloppy. He looked out of shape. He didn't look ready for what Alexei Oleinik was throwing at him. Obviously, like the commentator said, I mean, the pace is hard to get used to. It was obvious that he wasn't adjusting to it well. But man, Alexei Oleinik was putting a beating on him in the first round.
Yeah. I thought Fabricio came back well in the second because he got that top mount. Looked very well on the ground. I don't really remember how the third played out.
I think Fabricio got 2 or 3 takedowns. If you have the stats up, I believe he got 2 or 3 takedowns. And, I mean, they were lazy. They were both obviously very tired. But for that reason, I did think Fabricio won this fight. I had it 29-28 for Fabricio simply off the takedowns.
3 takedowns.
In the third? Or just overall?
In general.
Just overall.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, just a really rough comeback fight for Fabricio Werdum, man. A really, really underwhelming performance. And this was a really big win, though, for Alexei Oleinik.
I mean, how crazy.
This is going to move him up in the standings. And I don't want to get a little bit ahead of myself, but I think he might be meeting somebody who fought on the card ahead of him.
Oh.
So, Alexei Oleinik defeated. I'm sorry, you got anything you want to get it? Any other shit you want to talk about?
No, I mean, I kind of thought Fabricio got that one too, but I guess I could see how Alexei, I don't know. That one was a weird one too.
Yeah, so Alexei Oleinik is now 59-13-1 overall. He's 8-4 in the UFC, and that was his first decision victory since August 26th of 2010.
Oh my God.
Almost 10 years and 25 fights. And
he is the only fighter, too, to compete in 4 different decades.
Yeah, we said that last time he fought.
Ugh.
Fabricio Werdum now 23-9-1 overall, 11-6 in the UFC. He is now 9-4 since he returned to the UFC for his second stint in 2012. And he suffered 6 of his 9 career losses by decision. So that takes me to a rough 2-3 on the night. Slim is 3-2. Let's move on to the welterweight division, where we had the headliner of the preliminary card, a rematch.
Yeah, Anthony Showtime Pettis going up against Cowboy Don Cerrone. I did not agree with this decision.
Really?
No. I thought Cerrone was... Oh, hang on, I got to see these.
Pineapples, 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 pineapples. Oh.
What is that?
Pineapples will help make it go away sometimes.
What?
Or look at the... If you need to sneeze, look at the light.
Yeah, you look at the sun. All right.
Whatever, dude. Don't talk to me.
So, Donald Cerrone, I thought he did just enough in the range department. Like, Pettis was getting in close and landing good box. Like, it was doing good with boxing, but he was doing good boxing. I don't know. I just think Cerrone had this one. Just by, like, the volume of strikes thrown and, like, let me see what the stats were. So, significant strikes even. Pettis 63, Donald 62. Donald did have 2 takedowns of 8, however. Anthony had none of 1. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think about it?
Sorry, I'm eating a little candy.
Amateur.
Man, I just, I did think Pettis won this fight. Kind of wore Donald out. It was just a back and forth battle, but Pettis was just getting the better of the exchanges. I thought personally, Donald had his moments, but yeah, I would have had to score this one 29-28 for Pettis personally.
Fair enough.
So we got that one wrong as well, bro. I'm 2-6 on the night, or 2-6, 2-4 on the night, and Slim is now 3-3. Rough preliminary card for the boys.
What's next for either one of these guys?
Anthony Pettis definitely needs to stay at welterweight. I do think, you know, no matter what comes next, he needs to take his wins and losses and just grind it out at 170. And Cowboy, as sad as it sounds, I think he needs to start preparing for retirement. I think, you know, however many fights he has left on his contract, I think he needs to accept that this should be his last contract and start planning a really good farewell fight.
Yeah.
Maybe not now, you know, maybe another 2 or 3 I think he has in him. But I think at this point, it's time to start thinking about it a little bit, you know, at least getting ahead of things, planning it out.
He's on 4 in a row right now.
Yeah. So that's my take on it.
It is a lot. All right, heading on to the pay-per-view. The first.
Hold on. I have some facts.
Facts. He's got stats. You're going to be shitting stats.
Anthony Pettis is now 23-10 overall, 10-9 in the UFC. He is now 2-1 since he moved up to the UFC welterweight division. He has improved to 5-8 in his past 13 UFC appearances.
Did you say 10-1?
10-9. No, 2-1. I'm sorry. Okay. He improved to 2-1. Pettis is now 5-8 in his past 13 UFC appearances, dating back to when he lost the lightweight belt. Donald Cerrone is now 36-15 overall, 23-12 in the UFC. His 4-fight losing streak is, of course, as Slim just said, the longest of his career. He hasn't won since May of last year.
Wow.
But yeah, that was the preliminary card on ESPN, and this takes us to the 5-fight main card. Which was just all action.
I loved it. Loved every second of it.
Let's all go right. Ahead. Go to the first fight of the main card in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, we had Greg Hardy going up against Jorgen De Castro. This fight really showcased how much you could hear in the octagon because Greg was breathing.
That you could hear that asthma, boy.
Oh yeah. So I guess in the first round, Greg again with the patient approach. Jorgen De Castro, he was throwing him and he was landing some very nice leg kicks. He was pretty much making Hardy run away every time he would throw the hands too. In the second round, Jorgen threw a kick and Greg kind of checked it off Daniel.
It was actually at the end of the first round, I believe.
Okay. Based off, you know, Daniel Cormier's advice, which he heard, and I guess it fucked up Jorgen's foot. I never heard anything of what came of that or what actually happened, but he's like stopped throwing kicks altogether. And he looked very flat-footed.
He was chewing that leg up, man.
Yeah, he looked very flat-footed after that. His punches weren't laying the same. And Greg Hardy was throwing some leg kicks of his own.
Yeah,
Yeah, Greg started landing some of his own. I think he realized that he had a hurt opponent, and he took absolute advantage of it. I do have to say, if I have to compliment Greg Hardy on what he's improved on, his fight IQ has definitely impressed me. He's definitely learned since he came in and was just swinging as hard as he could. You know, he's had some big
although
fights.
Although I still miss that Greg Hardy.
That's a good Greg Hardy. He needs to tap into that Greg Hardy at some time, at some point in the fight, you know. But as of right now, I think he's doing a good job. You know, I think that injury really did affect this fight a lot. But nonetheless, we'll see what's next for Greg Hardy. I think it's going to be another big fight against an up-and-coming prospect.
Interesting.
I'm actually interested to see who wins in the heavyweight division on these next two cards to possibly see who fights Greg Hardy next.
Okay. I like it. All right.
But that moved me to an absolutely fucking brutal 2-5 on the night. And Slim improves to 4-3.
Nice. All right. On to this next one. We got Calvin. Oh, also, that was Jorgen's first loss.
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah, my bad. I forgot to, I keep forgetting to do that. Greg Hardy is now 6-2 overall. He has improved to 3-2 in the UFC, and that was the first decision victory of his career. Jorgen De Castro, on the other hand, 6-1 overall, 1-1 in the UFC, and that was a 6-fight losing streak, obviously snapped for the first defeat of his career.
6-fight winning streak.
Ooh, that's what I said. Did I? 6-fight losing streak?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 6-fight losing streak. Snap. I'm just kidding. Suck a wiener, Slim. Moving on to the featherweight division that was actually fought at a 150.5-pound catch weight because somebody missed weight by 4.5 pounds.
Yikes. This isn't his first time missing weight at that weight class either. So anyway.
Did he miss it that bad?
I don't think it was that bad. I don't remember, though. Ah, but anyways, we have Calvin Kattar going up against Jeremy Stephens. Like I said last week, bro, Calvin Kattar's boxing. He is the dark horse in the featherweight division.
He really is, man. His boxing's stupid. Some of the best in the UFC.
Yeah, but in the first round, Jeremy was catching him quite a bit. He had him rocked at one point, and I was like, oh, wow, Jeremy looks great. And then second round, Kattar just turned the tide.
Yeah. So he ended up dropping Jeremy Stephens.
Followed with an elbow.
Elbow inside, like on an exchange. Whew. Followed up with a nice little punch over the top. Came back in with another elbow that just split Jeremy Stephens' forehead into pieces.
Yuck.
It was bloody. It was shooting blood everywhere. It was a mean elbow. He landed another punch, I believe, after that, and then the fight was stopped. What a great performance by Calvin Kattar. Like Slim said, a real dark horse in the 145-pound division. I mean, he could really, really make a run for that title, man.
I think so. I think he will.
With that punching power and the way he puts those punches together.
His combinations are just awesome.
He can do something.
Oh, yeah. Calvin Kattar is definitely one to watch out for in 2020.
Absolutely. So Calvin Kattar is now 21-4 overall, 5-2 in the UFC. He has earned all four of his UFC stoppage victories by knockout. Jeremy Stephens, on the other hand, 28-18 overall, 15-17 in the UFC. He is now 8-9 with one no contest since he went down to the UFC featherweight division in May of 2013. And Jeremy Stephens, unfortunate, I don't know what to say, distinction that he carries with him. His 17 losses in UFC competition are most in company history.
Oof.
Yeah. So what a win for Calvin Kattar, continuing to climb that 145-pound division. Another loss against a top opponent for Jeremy Stephens. I'm sure he'll, you know, keep fighting the best of the best until he's done. But, yeah, that moves me to 3-5 on the night, and Slim is 5-3.
Yep. On to the next one. We had Francis Ngannou going up against
the famous
Mr. Poopy Butthole. Ooh, wee.
Is he going to make a return this season?
Absolutely.
Did you watch the first episode?
Yeah, the first episode back was a little bit too all over the place. Like,
whack.
It was all right. They were doing a lot with it. You know, I got it, but that last episode, last night's fire.
I didn't watch it. I'll watch it when we're done.
Oh, fire, bro! They made up for that first little shitty one. It was fire. Okay. It was a good one.
I'll watch it when we're done. But
hey, have you watched that Solar Opposites as well?
No, it looks stupid.
Bro, it's pretty fun. I watched the first episode last night. I was geeked out. Like, there was a couple times I was geeking pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Huh. It just looks like a Rick and Morty spinoff.
I mean, it is. It's a lot of the same voices.
Like,
it's
fucking, like American Dad to Family Guy.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same thing, but, like, it's still funny, you know? Like, it has its moments for sure.
Okay.
Let's get back into this Francis Ngannou and Jair Zinho Rosenstruck fight.
Oh my god, we almost saw this live. Ugh.
I know,
I just wonder if things would have been different. So, this fight was over in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Francis Ngannou came in with the most wild punches I have ever seen anyone throw.
Because how are you gonna, I mean, it's gonna, the only way you can literally, there's only one way you can literally beat that. Unless you're going for a takedown. I'm talking just striking.
Bro, he should have.
Who, Jairzinho?
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, yeah. But he probably just thought, you know, we're about to slug it out. He probably thought he had better hands than Francis. But you can't compete with that power, bro. The only way you can beat Francis like that is if you just counter-strike, stand in there, and throw a nice counter-strike and bop him. But who wants to stand there? I mean, you're going to end up falling back a little
Not
bit.
Not me. No way. No way.
It was just an absolutely stunning performance by Francis Ngannou, showing exactly why he is literally the scariest man on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Get that man a title shot.
Yeah,
the way he's improved, I don't see him beating Stipe again.
I believe you said you don't believe him. What? What did you just say?
I mean, I don't see Stipe beating him again.
Oh, wow. I don't know. Stipe is a different beast, as we've seen. But as DC said today, he said if Stipe is not going to defend that belt, him and Francis got to run it.
He said he's not scared.
How crazy would any of those fights be?
Dude, we saw Rumble Johnson take DC off his feet with a punch.
When's Rumble coming back? When's that? Is that, like, for sure? Like,
oh, I don't know. I don't even know if he's, like, on the roster yet or anything.
Okay.
I know it was talked about, but I don't think it's a confirmed.
I thought he was like, I don't know. I thought he was at like a press conference or something.
I don't know. But yeah, we saw him knock DC right off his feet with it was either a punch or a kick. What the hell is Francis going to do to him?
Right.
If Francis retires DC, I'll be so upset. That is not a storybook ending to his career.
That'd be dope if Rumble came back and beat like a big name just like out of nowhere and then if him and Francis.
If he fought Francis.
That'd be so fire.
Oh, my God.
That'd be so fire.
Oh, dude, because Rumble's huge.
That would go so crazy, dude.
Rumble looks like a fucking marshmallow man.
Yeah. Nonetheless, a much-needed win for me. That improves my record to 4-5 on the night as Slim goes to 6-4. 4-5. Hold on. I'm 4-5, so Slim would have to be 6-3?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so.
Slim.
I don't know.
Is that right?
I'm two ahead of you. That's all I know.
Slim. Is that? Yeah, that is right.
All right.
Yeah.
So Jairzinho taking his first ever loss in mixed martial arts.
So Francis Ngannou is now 15-3 overall, 10-2 in the UFC. His 4-fight UFC winning streak at heavyweight is the longest active streak in the division. He has earned all 15 of his career victories by stoppage. That includes all 10 of his UFC wins.
Wow.
Ngannou has earned his past 4 victories by a knockout in a combined 2 minutes and 42 seconds of cage time. That is stupid. Ngannou's 10 stoppage victories since 2015
in the UFC overall, every division combined, is tied with Thiago Santos and Charles Oliveira for most in the company.
Wait, say again?
Ngannou's 10 stoppage victories since 2015 in the UFC are tied with Thiago Santos and Charles Oliveira for most in the UFC.
Wow.
And then Ngannou's 10 stoppage victories since 2015 is obviously the most in the heavyweight division. Jairzinho, on the other hand, 10-1 overall, 4-1 in the UFC. That was an amazing 10-fight winning streak he took to get to the top of the heavyweight division. Unfortunately, he ran into a big roadblock here. I think they're going to run Jairzinho versus Alexei Oleinik.
Huh.
What do you think about that?
I like it.
Jairzinho was number 6, I believe. He just lost to the number 3 top contender, Francis Ngannou. Meanwhile, Alexei Oleinik, he's number 7, I believe, just beat number 8, I believe. Or is that what – was Verdum still ranked?
No, Verdum was unranked.
Okay.
Let me pull up the rankings.
But I believe Oleinik – or maybe is Oleinik like 12 maybe? Am I tripping?
Yeah, he wasn't that low. I don't think he was single digits. Let's take a look here. So, Francis Ngannou was number 2. Jairzinho was number 6. And Oleinik was number 12. You were really close. I don't think Rozenstruik falls back that far. I think he would fight, like, maybe the winner of Overeem versus Harris.
Well, yeah. That'd be a good one.
Because I think Shamil Abdurmakimov is fighting someone soon. Oh, Cyril Gane. That's who he's fighting.
Ooh, that's going to be fire, too.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we wait till this weekend, the winner of that fights Rozenstruik.
Okay. Yeah, so that was...
put Rozenstruik in there with Derek Lewis. That'd be dope.
I know, that would be super cool. Yeah, that was a heavyweight division. Let's go ahead and move on to the first title fight of the night. In the bantamweight division,
the messenger Henry Cejudo going against the Dominator Dominick Cruz. Man, called it.
Yeah,
Cruz. As much as he was doing his running around, skipping around thing that he does, his footwork looked just like it used to, but he just looked a little bit slower. First round was pretty much all Henry. He was catching him with amazing leg kicks. And Cruz really didn't have much of an answer for it. He was trying to punch when he could, but it just seemed like Henry like was just stalking him the entire round. Going to the second, a little more of the same thing. Cruz was landing a little bit better, but it ended up getting him caught.
Yeah, Cejudo jumped right on him like he does with that absolutely amazing speed. Just the second time Dom tried getting up, Henry just caught him so clean. It was vicious. And then he just ended up getting those quick little follow-up punches he puts on you to not let you get up. And, yeah, it happened how he said it would.
Yeah.
But I think most of the interesting stuff about this fight happened afterwards.
Yeah, we have a my first nominee for douche move of the year.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe it's the second. I think we had one at the beginning of the year. But at least this has to go on the board. Dominick Cruz saying that Keith Peterson smelled like cigarettes and alcohol. And there is no reason.
Is that douchey?
That's douchey as hell. Like, bro, come on. You were not getting up from that. Like, Henry was just smacking you in the face. And you're going to say he smelled like cigarettes and alcohol? What? Douche move.
Yeah.
Take your L.
It was a little bit, Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, but I think the biggest storyline that came out
especially
of this...
Especially from, like, him being a commentator and, like, so, like, in the media and stuff, you'd think he'd just be more, like, respectful, like, oh, yeah, he got me, blah, 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 I'll be back. Nope!
Right.
he took it there.
Yeah, but I think the biggest storyline out of this has to obviously be, maybe even the biggest storyline of this entire fight card, Henry Cejudo is apparently hanging the gloves up.
The biggest storyline of the year. In MMA.
Maybe. So far, yeah.
Because he's 33. He just beat the consensus best bantamweight of all time. And now you're just like, nah, I'm cool. I defended both belts. I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah, I guess there's just not really much. There's not too much spark going on in either division. I guess maybe is his view.
Well, what he said was from how long he had to be out for that shoulder surgery. He said he really enjoyed that time.
Yeah.
Anyone's
so,
more.
So, you know, I'm sure. I don't know. I think he might get another urge to come back and play. Come back and fight.
Well, another piece of that puzzle was this was the last fight on his contract.
Right. So he might want to big.
If you're trying to add another zero to that for your two division champ, I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it could be a big numbers game for Henry Cejudo. I don't think it's his last fight in the UFC.
No. He's 33. Who retires that young? That's like when Connor was like, I'm retiring young. Thanks for the cheese at like 30. Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So that improves Henry Cejudo's record to 16-3. Dominic Cruz is now 22-3. Henry Cejudo becomes the second fighter in UFC history. What are you doing? Stop doing that.
Oh, can you hear it? My bad.
Yeah. Henry Cejudo becomes the second fighter in UFC history to record successful title defenses in two weight classes, DC being the only other one. Cejudo is now 7-0 in the bantamweight division in his career. He has landed at least one takedown in all but one of his UFC fights where he's attempted a takedown at least.
Wow.
Cruz has suffered consecutive losses for the first time in his career. He has now not won a fight since June of 2016, and that is the first time he's ever been knocked out. Crazy. So not the best look for Dominic Cruz coming back. We'll see what's next for him. Henry Cejudo, though, apparently going out on top. We'll see what's next with that. I feel like that's going to be a very updated situation. I'm not looking too much into it right now.
No. I think it's all smoke and whistles, smoke and mirrors.
So moving on to the main event of the evening.
Oh, my God. I meant to go back and rewatch this yesterday, but I didn't. But it's definitely worth a rewatch. Justin Gaethje against Tony Ferguson. Wow.
What a performance. Possibly performance of the year.
I was on the edge of my seat.
I mean, it has to be performance of the year. Maybe other than Connor and Cowboy. The way Connor went out there and did that, I think this might be the best performance we've seen all year.
I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. Tony did not look like Tony.
No, but I want to give the credit to Justin Gaethje on that.
Yeah.
He just really didn't give Tony, you know, usually Tony's the one coming forward. Justin Gaethje was just pushing right back.
Yeah.
With power.
That dude, his boxing is just on top of the world at this point. I mean,
with All-American Wrestling as well, bro.
Unbelievable. Dude.
I mean, what a performance, man. I can't say Tony Ferguson fought a good fight.
Yeah.
He just couldn't do anything. I mean, Justin Gaethje absolutely stifled him with offense, nonetheless.
Right.
It was amazing.
Not even counters. He took it to Tony every time.
Of course, give some of the credit there to head coach Trevor Whitman.
Whitman has now had two fighters beat the GOATs in their divisions.
Yeah. Yeah. He's putting some real fighters out here, and Slim and I both immediately said after this fight, we think Gaethje can beat Khabib.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give my pick right now, but I'm leaning towards Gaethje to beat Khabib.
Bro, the fact that he can stop a takedown and force you to keep it standing.
Well. And I mean, Khabib comes in with, you know, not the best shots all the time. You know, I can see Justin stopping, you know, maybe one or two will get through, but I can see Justin stopping most of those.
Yeah.
With that striking, Khabib could be in a world of trouble.
Right, because we've seen Tony get taken down, right? Kevin Lee had no problem taking Tony down a couple times.
Yeah.
So I think that now this is almost a more interesting matchup to me. I am upset at what we lost by not getting Tony and Khabib. However, I am now excited of what we've gained with Justin and Khabib.
I can feel that for sure.
But now people are like, oh, well, Khabib's legacy will never be the same because he never beat the 12-win streak Tony. And I was like, okay, but his next fighter did.
Right.
So now what?
And it might even be a bigger test than Tony, so.
Honestly.
Justin Gaethje, let's go ahead and improves his record now to 22-2 overall. Tony Ferguson, on the other hand, is 25-4. Justin Gaethje, the first in MMA history to win titles in the UFC and the World Series of Fighting.
Yeah.
20 of his 22 victories have came by stoppage, which include all five of his UFC wins. He's also the only fighter in UFC history to win at least one fight night bonus in each of his first seven octagon appearances. He has earned 9 of them in 7 appearances.
That's nuts.
That's stupid. That is stupid.
Who else is doing that?
Nobody. Ferguson has had, as Slim mentioned, that 12-fight winning streak snapped. That was the first time he's lost since May of 2012, and the first time in his career he's ever been knocked out.
That's crazy.
And then Tony Ferguson, on the other hand, though, has been awarded a fight night bonus in 8 of his past 9 UFC appearances, Slim. Some numbers on the event here. The UFC promotional guidelines compliance payout for the event was $305,500. The fight night bonuses went to Tony Ferguson and Francis Ngannou, who both got $50,000 in performance bonuses. Justin Gaethje received his 2 for a total of $100,000. UFC 249 drew an announced attendance of 0 for a live gate of $0. And 0 cents. Betting favorites went 9-2. I thought
they would have done better than that.
Me too. Betting favorites went 9-2 on the card. Betting favorites are now 5-4 in UFC headliners this year, Slim. Another one to look out for.
Oh.
The total fight time for this 11 fight card was 2 hours, 25 minutes, and 23 seconds.
It felt short.
And that was UFC 249. Slim and I both struggled, me a little bit more than Slim. I got him on the Justin Gaethje fight, but other than that, he got me on the DeCastro and Hardy fight and the Nico Price and Luke Hay fight. I was swinging from the hip last week. I went with a lot of underdogs.
And I won $60.
Yeah, Slim went crazy. I actually lost money for the first time on DraftKings all year, like Korean baseball and MMA. I've been absolutely murdering it this year.
Korean baseball.
But, yeah, an unfortunate loss for me last week.
Yo, let me see if I
kind of had a balls to the wall lineup, though. You know, I went all the way in, so.
Listen to this crazy stat. I see. So, Francis Ngannou has now completely decimated Alistair Overeem and Jarzynia Rodenstark, right?
Right.
Both got KO'd viciously.
Right.
For Jarzynia Rozenstruik got $22,000 for that fight. Guess how much Overeem made when they fought?
100.
$860,000.
Jeez. Almost a milli?
Yeah. That's what he makes almost every time he fights.
Wow.
And Jarzynia got
$22,000. Overeem's contract goes brazy.
That Pride contract held some weight.
That's crazy.
Dude, insane.
Yeah, but that was UFC 249. I need to check our records because I deleted what our record was last week, but I'll just go back and listen to it on the podcast from last week and get you guys the updated record. Going into UFC, what's this one called?
Fight Night
170. UFC on ESPN. UFC on ESPN
9.
There we go.
Okay.
Okay. This one will be taking place at the Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, I haven't been there in a while.
Do you think they just left everything how it was? Like, fuck it. We'll be right back.
For the next month, yeah. I'm sure they did. This one, not as star-studded as the last card, but still a fun card to watch nonetheless.
Yeah. Give me 1 minute here to
get my stuff up and spark this blunt here.
Hey. The headlining fight in this card is Anthony Smith versus Glover Teixeira. Ovince St. Preux making his heavyweight debut in the co-main event. I like that one.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. A lot of good fights on this one, actually.
Yeah, my bad. There we go. Got this ready to go. Got this ready to go. And we are... Dun, dun, dun. Ready to rock, my friend.
All right. So we have, in the very first fight of the night, Chase the Vanilla Gorilla Sherman coming back. He was away from the UFC for a while after his three losses in a row. He went to the Island Fight Series and got three.
Bare knuckle boxing, too, I'm pretty sure, didn't he?
Yeah, but in MMA, he got three first-round knockouts. Yeah, he lost to Joey Beltran in November.
Yeah.
Weird. But anyway, the UFC was like, you know what, you just got three knockouts in MMA. Let's get you back in here. And he is fighting newcomer Ike Villanueva.
That's Hurricane Ike Villanueva.
Okay.
His first name is really Isaac, but yeah, his nickname is Hurricane Ike. Looking at the tail of the tape here, Sherman is only 30 years old. And then Isaac Villanueva making his UFC debut at 36 years old. Sherman is 6'4", Villanueva is 6'2", and Sherman will have a 5.5-inch reach advantage. So we haven't seen
his
the last
weigh-in
time-
was 203 pounds.
Villanueva?
Yeah.
Wow. What do you got on these guys' records, Slim?
Chase Sherman is 14-6. Villanueva is 16-9. Kind of a weird
records.
Let's see. Sherman 2-5, and Ike is a newcomer.
Nice, nice. So an interesting tidbit here. These two have actually fought two common opponents. They both fought and knocked out Rashad Coulter, and they both lost to Justin Ledet. Looking at how they get it done, of his 14 wins, Chase Sherman has 13 knockouts with one win by decision.
Wow.
On the other hand, of his 16 wins, Isaac Villanueva has 13 knockouts with three decision wins. So these guys are going to be going in there, swinging leather, first fight of the night. I'm expecting a knockout from one of them. Both of these guys have been knocked out before. Chase Sherman's never been submitted. I think that's something to watch out for. Neither of these guys have locked up a submission, though. So this one's going to be all on the feet. Look for Chase Sherman to actually use a lot of volume to set up his knockout shot, but he does take a lot to give a lot, which could be a big problem here with the heavy-handed Isaac Hurricane Ike Villanueva. I think Chase Sherman's riding a hot streak right now. I think he's been in the UFC before. It's interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see a newcomer making his UFC debut since last week. You know, last week we had a lot of veterans, so it's going to be interesting to see a debut happening under these circumstances. I don't know if it'll help or hurt Ike Villanueva, but I want to go with Chase Sherman in this one.
Give me the newcomer.
ANA MMA going to say fuck it and disagree. First fight of the night. That's how we're getting down, baby. Slim's going with Hurricane Ike Villanueva, and I am going with Chase the Vanilla Gorilla Sherman.
Yeah. All right, moving
on to the next fight.
We have Hunter Azure going up against Brian Boom Keller, who his last fight was on the McGregor Cerrone pay per view, and now he's back down to the early fights.
Yeah, he kind of got a little lucky on that last one.
True. Let's see. Hunter Azure, 8-0 overall. He did have a win on Contender Series and a win over Brad Katona in the UFC, so he's technically 1-0 in the UFC right now. Boom Kelleher, however, is 4-3 in the UFC, coming off that nice win over Ode Osborne that we didn't see coming. Yeah.
That was a really, really impressive win. But he gets another big prospect here. So Hunter Azor, looking at the tail of the tape, Hunter Azor, 28. Brian Kelleher is 33. Azor will have a 2-inch height advantage and a 4.5-inch reach advantage. Did you already say the record, Slim?
Yeah.
Okay. So Azor won in a. All right, cool. You already said all that. Azor, looking at how they get it done, he has 3 knockouts, 1 submission, and 4 decisions. He uses a lot of really, really aggressive wrestling. He likes using some ground and pound. And then Brian Kelleher, on the other hand, a dangerous submission artist with 9 submissions. He also has 7 knockouts and 4 decision losses. So he's actually decision wins, not losses. He does have 4 decision losses as well, though. And then he's actually been submitted 6 times as well. Neither of these guys have been knocked out, so I'm interested to see how Hunter Azor is going to look to get this one done. I think he's going to use his grappling to just get this one to the ground and ride it out as long as he can. But very, very dangerous fighter there with Brian Kelleher, who can fight from the bottom. I do think, though, Hunter Azor is really, really talented. I do think he gets this one done. Give me Hunter Azor.
He beat Brad Katona. You know what? I'm going to take Boom.
All right. Me and Slim disagreeing. First 2 fights of the night. Wow. Is this how we're doing it? Is this what we're doing tonight? Looking at the odds for these last 2 fights, Chase Sherman is a -155 favorite over the +125 Ike Villanueva. And then Hunter Azor is the -185 favorite over the +155 Brian Kelleher. So I'm going with underdogs.
Yes, sir. All right, right into the next one. We got Mowgli, Gabriel Benitez, going up against Omar Morales.
Yeah, who'd Gabriel Benitez fight his last fight again?
Sadiq Youssef.
And the one before.
Yeah, Humberto Benedict.
Bandana, yeah. Okay, so looking at the tails of the tape here, Gabriel Mowgli Benitez, 31 years old, and Omar, Venezuela fighter, Morales, I believe UFC Contender Series alumni, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, making his much... he already fought once in the UFC. I'm tripping.
Dong Young Ma.
Yeah. So
he was supposed to fight Alexander Hernandez? Oh!
Yeah, they think really highly of this kid, man.
He's 34.
Yeah, he's older. He will also have the 3-inch height advantage and the 2-inch reach advantage. Looking at their records, what you got, Slim?
Benitez, 21-7, 5-3 in the UFC. Omar, 9-0, 1-0 in the UFC.
Yeah, and then looking at how they get it done, Gabriel Benitez, a very dangerous submission artist. 10 of his 21 wins have came by submission. The other 7 stoppages, obviously, by knockout. So 17 out of 21 wins by stoppage. Definitely a really good rate there for Gabriel Benitez. Not too bad on the other side there, though, for Venezuela fighter Omar Morales. He has 7 stoppages out of his 9 victories, with 4 of them being submissions, 3 being knockouts. I think on the feet, it's going to be pretty even. Both of these guys are kind of even with their strike differentials and how much they're putting out and absorbing. And then on the ground, I think Benitez has a big advantage in the submission game, but Omar Morales is actually pretty good at wrestling. So if his submission defense can kind of keep Benitez at bay in that aspect, I do think he's going to be able to take this one. I'm going to go with Omar Morales.
I'm going to do the same.
ANA MMA going to agree on this one, our first agreement of the night. We're both going with Omar Morales.
Nice.
On to the next one.
Yeah.
In the women's bantamweight division,
we have the only 500 fighter in the UFC, Sajara, going up against Cheesecake, my least favorite nickname other than Cupcake, Sarah Marais.
Yeah. So looking at the tail of the tape on this one, Sajara Sarge Eubanks, 35 years old. Sarah Cheesecake Morris is 32. Morris will also have a 3-inch height advantage, and both of these ladies have a 67-inch reach. What do you got on their record, Slim?
Sarge is 4-4, 2-2 in the UFC. Samurai is 6...
Overall, 2-2 in the UFC, you mean?
Yes. Marais is 6-5. She is...
Overall?
Overall, 3-4 in the UFC.
Nice. Who did Sajara Eubanks lose her last two fights to?
Betch Kara and Aspen Ladd.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I forgot she fought Aspen Ladd. That's really good competition there. Yeah. And then who was it that Sarah Morse beat her last fight?
Leanna Joja.
Okay.
After coming off three straight losses.
Looking at how these two ladies get it done, Sajara Eubanks, of her four wins, two of them have came by stoppage, being knockout, and then two other wins by decision, and then her four losses all by decision. And then Sarah Morse, on the other hand, of her six wins, five of them are by stoppage, three by knockout, two by submission, and then one decision win. She has been knocked out once, and she has lost four times by decision. Looking at how these ladies get it done, I'm going to give the stand-up advantage to Sajara Eubanks. She throws more than 2.5 more strikes per minute. Well, I'm sorry, she lands more than 2.5 strikes more per minute. She has a plus striking differential of more than one, while Sarah Morse is negative, more than negative one. Grappling advantage, Sajara Eubanks, really, really good wrestling. She averages 2 takedowns per 15 minutes. She has 44% takedown accuracy and 63% takedown defense, which is all a lot better than anything on Sarah Morse's stats in that category. But if it goes into submissions, Sarah Morse is a lot more dangerous of a submission artist. If she locks something up, Sajara Eubanks could be in a big world of trouble. But I'm going to go with the biggest favorite on this card, the -370 favorite over the +295 underdog. Give me Sajara Eubanks.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? I think it should be a little bit closer than that. I'd have it more at the -250. Well, Sarah Morse hasn't really beat anybody all crazy like that.
No.
But I'd have it more at the -250. I think that's a little bit of a high odds right there. But yeah, nonetheless, I do think she is a pretty big favorite on the card. She'd still be the biggest favorite on the card, even those odds.
Yeah, I mean, I'll do the same.
A&A, MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Sarge Eubanks.
Yeah, going on to the next one we have. Michael the Menace Johnson, he's back, going up against Thiago Moises. Ooh.
Yeah, this one's going to be a good one, man. Thiago, looking at the tail of the tape, Thiago Moises, only 25 years old. And then Michael Johnson, getting up there, 33 years old now. Johnson will also have a 1-inch height advantage and a 3-inch reach advantage. What do you got on their record, Slim?
Michael Johnson, 19-15 overall. Oh, my God, he's fought in the UFC so many times.
He's 11-11 in the UFC.
Okay. Thank you. Thiago Moises, 12-4 overall. He is 1-2 in the UFC.
Yeah. So these guys actually have two common opponents. They both fought and lost to Beneil Dariush, and they both fought and beat Danny Castillo. Who was it? Who were the last two losses there for Michael Johnson?
Stevie Ray and Josh Emmett.
Right, right. And then who did Thiago Moises lose to? Somebody good.
Demir Ismagulov.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking at the way these guys get the fights won, of his 19 wins, 10 of Michael Johnson's wins have came by stoppage, with 8 of those being knockouts. He is prone to being submitted, though, and most of Thiago Moises' wins have came by submission. I'm pretty sure he is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. It doesn't say on here that he is, but I think he is. And then I really think the only way that Michael Johnson's going to be able to get this one done is to win by decision, which he's won most of his fights by. So I don't think he's going to be afraid to go those full three rounds at a high pace. But he better be ready to grapple in this one, because Thiago Moises, he does throw pretty good hands, but he will take you down and he will attempt submissions. And if he does get a hold of you, you're in for some trouble. So I do think this is going to be a good one. I got to give Michael Johnson the advantage on the feet. The odds are actually even in this one. But based on who they fought, I don't like that Thiago Moises is 1-2 in the UFC. I got to go with Michael Johnson in this one. I think his striking is going to prevail. He'll be able to shrug Moises off if he tries getting him down. I got to go with Michael Johnson. Do you remember?
Fuck, dude, I don't know. Is this a 155?
All right, dude, don't make a fucking job out of it.
Is this a lightweight?
Yeah, it's at lightweight. 155.
Yeah, I'll go with Michael Johnson.
A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Michael Demetrius Johnson.
Talk about this next one. I gotta grab a drink.
All right, cool. I'm actually really, really excited for this next one. So I'm glad that Slim gave me the opportunity to go ahead and speak on it. So we are seeing the UFC debut of Felipe Lins, who is a Brazilian fighter. Typically fights in a light heavyweight division. But he will be fighting in heavyweight for this one. He's fought in Bellator before. He fought in the PFL and won the $1 million cash prize. That was in 2018, I believe. And then he missed the season after that due to an injury. But now he's back. He's going to be facing Andrei Arlovsky in his UFC debut. So he's getting a former champ, a very accomplished fighter. And both of these guys are actually fighting out of American Top Team. I don't think they... Oh, they fight at the same exact gym. Okay, cool. So looking at the tail of the tape, Andrei Arlovsky, 41 years old. Felipe Lins is 34. It'll be Arlovsky who has a 1-inch height advantage, and Lins who has a 2-inch reach advantage. Looking at their records here, Arlovsky is 28-19 overall, with 2 no contests. He is 17-13 in the UFC. And then Felipe Lins, on the other hand, 14-3 overall, making his UFC debut. Looking at how these guys get it done, Arlovsky, known to get the knockout of his 28 wins, I said, 17 knockouts, 3 submissions, so that's good for 20 stoppages. Other 8 wins, obviously, coming by decision. And then Lins, on the other hand, of his 14 wins, 12 of those have came by stoppage, 8 knockouts, 4 submissions. But Lins has been knocked out 3 times, all of his losses by knockout stoppage. We've seen Arlovsky, when he gets a hold of you, even at this old age, he can hurt you. But he also has Lins himself.
The PFL tournament winner?
Yeah, I said that. I talked about it. Don't worry. Don't worry, and he was in Bellator as well.
Oh.
And then, so he's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and then Arlovsky is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt. I do think advantage on the ground goes to Lins, and then on the feet, Lins has equal power to Arlovsky. If he can just not get caught in a firefight, where I don't know if either of these guys' chins are going to hold up if they get into a firefight like that. That's what worries me about this fight. But all said, I'm going to go with the UFC newcomer to get a win in his debut. Give me Felipe Lins.
Same.
A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Felipe Lins. That was your preliminary card on ESPN Plus. You're going to be able to stay on ESPN Plus for this one, which is going to be a 5-fight main card. Let's get right into it, Slim. I got to go to Acme.
What do you got to get?
I got to get some groceries.
Milk, eggs, cheese, butter.
Poop.
All right, so the first fight of the main card, we had Baby K, Carl Robertson, going up against the Italian Dream, Marvin Vettori. Wow, this fight is great.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one, man. Vettori, he's just been on a tear, bro.
I know.
I mean, he's really good. He is 4-2 and 1 in the UFC. To Carl Robertson's credit, he is 4-2 in the UFC himself. Looking at the tail of the tape here, Robertson, 3 years older than Vettori. He is 29 years old. And then Robertson, that is. Looking at their height, 6'1 compared to 6 foot, Robertson's going to have that 1-inch height advantage, and both of these guys will have a 74-inch reach. Their overall records, Robertson's 9-2, and Vettori, 14-4-1 overall. Looking at how they get it done, Robertson, known as a kickboxer, but most of his wins have actually came by submission, 45% of them. So he's really dangerous, but he can go all three rounds if need be. Vettori, on the other hand, a really dangerous submission artist himself. He's never been submitted, and he has actually won 10 of his 14 fights by submission, by stoppage, with 8 of those by submission. So I think that's really something to watch out for, because both of Carl Robertson's losses have came by submission. That worries me a lot in this one. On the feet, Vettori, he's kind of more of a defensive striker, but he does put out a pretty good – he actually has more output than Robertson, but Robertson looks to land the bigger shots. Vettori will kind of just wear you out, but it's not really a very high pace necessarily. He's just pretty accurate with his strikes. And then grappling advantage, Vettori is a better wrestler. And like I said, both of these guys dangerous with submissions. I think this is a really, really close one. Hard one to call, but I'm going to go with the Italian Stallion. Give me Marvin Vettori.
Same.
ANA, MMA, going to agree with this one. We're going with the Italian Dream. Sorry, not the Stallion.
The Stallion!
The Italian Dream, Marvin Vettori.
All right, moving on to this next one. It'll be interesting to see if he can make weight. It's Ray Borg going up against Ricky Simon.
Yeah, this is going to be a pretty evenly matched fight, I think, personally. Ray Borg is actually the younger fighter here.
Listen to these canceled bouts. Since 2017, Ray Borg had a canceled bout with Brandon Moreno 3 times, Joseph Benavidez, Pingwan Lee, Kyler Phillips, and Marlon Vera.
That's pretty impressive.
It's bad.
Just don't sign the contract, brother.
Well, most of them are because of his kid, you know, all the surgeries and all that.
Looking at the tail of the tape, Ricky Simon, 1 year older at 27, Ray Borg, 26. Simone will have a 2-inch height advantage and a 6-inch reach advantage. What do you got on their record, Slim?
Ricky Simon, 15-3. He is 3-2 in the UFC. Ray Borg, 13-4 overall. What?
I said my bitch left Coco.
Okay. Borg, 13-4 overall. He is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And 1, 2, 3, 7-4 in the UFC. Not bad.
Yeah, sorry. I'm thinking about stuff.
By your grocery list? Fuck off.
Yeah. So, looking at how these guys get it done.
I'm gonna get some more of these Hershey snacks.
Of his 15 wins, Ricky Simon has 7 stoppage victories, other 8 by decision. The Taz Mexican Devil, Ray Borg, on the other hand, a submission artist. Of his 13 wins, 6 submissions, 1 knockout, 6 decisions. Ricky Simon has been knocked out, submitted, and has lost a decision. Ray Borg, on the other hand, never been knocked out, but has been submitted and lost 3 decisions. Ray Borg, not very active on the feet whatsoever, which I think is going to be an advantage for Ricky Simone because usually he absorbs a lot more strikes than he puts out. But he actually has pretty decent strike defense. I think he needs just kind of stay away from Ricky Simone in this one. And or I'm sorry. Yeah, Ricky Simone needs to stay away from Ricky Simone.
He's his own enemy.
You're drinking out of.
It's straight iced dark coffee.
Oh, wow. Okay. Damn. Big flex. My bad.
Strong.
But yeah, he needs to say he can just kind of stay out of the way of Ray Borg. I think he'll be all right. I think both of these guys, though, the grappling's crazy. Both of them averaged more than 4 takedowns per 15 minutes. So that's wild. Ray Borg apparently is the better submission artist, but we'll have to see when they get in there. I'm going to go ahead and pick. That's tough. I don't know. Give me Ricky Simone.
I'll pick Ray Borg.
Damn. Slim picking 3 underdogs. We're going to disagree on this one. Slim's going with
really
Ray Borg.
Is he really the underdog? How are these people with 2 losses getting a higher betting odds than people coming off 2 wins?
Slim's appalled.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. Ricky Simone's the -175 favorite over the +145 underdog,
you know,
Ray Borg.
Vegas is still shut down. Discount all these odds.
Facts. My bitch love. Coco. Go ahead and move on to the next one.
The goofy gober, Drew Dober, going up against Alexander Hernandez. Oh, my God, I can't wait for this fight. This is the one I'm looking forward to, probably one of the second most on the card, actually, because the next
one. This one's going to be absolutely crazy, man. Looking at the tail of the tape, Alexander Hernandez, 27 years old, Drew Dober, 31. Hernandez has a 1-inch height advantage and a 2-inch reach advantage. What do you got on the record, Slim?
Hernandez, 11-2, only lost once in the UFC with 3 nice wins to back it up. Drew Dober, 22-9. He is
8-5-1.
Damn, he's fought a bunch.
That one's a no contest.
Yeah, sorry.
And who'd they recently fight?
Drew Dover recently fought Nasrat Haqparast with that crazy knockout, and he also knocked out Marco Polo Reyes. Alexander Hernandez just got a decision win over Francisco Trinaldo after coming back from that KO against Donald Cerrone. I think is Drew... Okay, Drew's 31. I thought he was the younger fighter for some reason.
So I think this is a really interesting thing to note right here. These guys have 2 common opponents, Slim. They both fought Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and they both fought Beneil Dariush. One of them won both of those fights. One of them lost both of those fights.
Right.
The one who won both of those is Alexander Hernandez.
Right.
I think that's something to watch out for. I like that stat a lot. Looking at how they get it done, 6 of Alexander Hernandez's 11 wins have came by stoppage. And then Drew Dober, on the other hand, 15 of his 22 career victories have came by stoppage. Drew Dober, though, has been submitted 3 times. He's been knocked out before. He's lost 5 decisions. Meanwhile, on the other hand, we see Alexander Hernandez was only knocked out that one time by Cowboy, who puts together crazy combinations. But he's never been submitted, which is how Drew Dober likes to get it done. And he only lost 1 decision. I do want to give the advantage on the feet, though, as much as I want to give it to Alexander Hernandez because he's accurate and he lands at a good rate. Drew Dober has a way better strike differential, way better striking defense, and he absorbs almost 2 less strikes per minute as compared to Alexander Hernandez. But grappling stats, every single one of them, takedown average, takedown accuracy, takedown defense, average submissions attempted per 15 minutes, all in favor of Alexander Hernandez.
Really?
I'm interested to see how that goes. Both of these guys are brown belts. If this one goes to the ground, I'm really excited to see how it plays out. But with even odds in this one, I think I'm going to go with Alexander Hernandez. That two common opponents really gets me that Alexander Hernandez was able to win those. Drew Dober lost them.
I have to do the same.
ANA MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Alexander Hernandez to defeat Drew Dober.
This next one is the one I'm looking forward to.
Main event of the evening.
The most. We got OSP going up to heavyweight. He's about to be huge.
That's about to be crazy. I can't wait to see.
He's about to be huge. Taking on Big Ben Rothwell, one of the biggest heavyweights at 6'4", 265 pounds. Do they have the same reach? Yeah, same reach. Wow. Gnarly. 80 inches for both of them.
Yeah, looking at the tail of the tape here, Ben Rothwell, only 1 year older than OSP.
That's crazy.
I know. Ben Rothwell, 1 inch taller, and OSP with that 2.5 inch reach advantage. What's the record, Slim?
Big Ben, 37-12. I don't even know his UFC record, but it's a lot.
It's 7-6.
Nice. OSP, 24-13.
UFC record's 12-8.
Nice. Hell yeah.
And then who they fight recently?
So OSP just got that nice Von Flew over Michael Alessichuk. He recently had 3 canceled opponents all this year in that time. Ryan Spann, Shamil Gazatov, and Ian Kuntalaba. Big Ben, however, recently got that win over Stefan Struve. A little bit controversial because the ref was like, well, I mean, you're winning. I know you got hit in the nuts, but, like, you know, you should keep going. Right. But he was on a 3-fight losing streak before that. And he was supposed to fight John Volante. That bout got canceled. Do you remember when they set that up?
Yeah.
Silly. I think this one is a lot better.
Yeah. So looking at how they get it done, both of these guys have upward of 80% stoppage rates, which is absolutely crazy. And then they've both been stopped a plethora of ways, knockouts, submissions, decisions. Looking at the striking stats, Ben Rothwell uses more he lands more per minute, so he's using more volume. He's got heavy hands. We haven't seen OSP take shots from a 265-pound guy yet, so I'm interested to see what that's looking like. But OSP is more accurate and absorbs much less on the feet. I don't know who I want to give the advantage to on that one. I think OSP's defense might help him out a lot in this one. Grappling, though, OSP averages more takedowns per 15 minutes, has higher accuracy, and averages more submissions per 15 minutes. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu purple belt, Ben Rothwell. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt, OSP. Looking at the odds, OSP is the minus 145 favorite over the plus 115 Ben Rothwell. I'm going to go with the underdog in this one. I think Ben Rothwell's size is a little bit too much for OSP at heavyweight. Is that too much to say? No? You think OSP is going to be big and ready to go?
Big.
Big, big.
Big.
Big, big.
That man could be thick. I can't wait.
So, who you going with?
OSP. My boy.
ANA MMA going to disagree again.
Woo!
Slim's going with Ovince St. Preux. I'm going with Big Ben Rothwell.
Wow. You're nuts.
Disagreeing on the co-main event of the evening. And then we got an interesting here. Meltdown. Dysfunction.
Quick, unplug. Take the batteries out. Take the batteries out.
Slim sucks, Serena.
Okay. All right. So, main event. Fight that was supposed to happen just last month, I think, right?
Something like that.
Something like that. And it just got rescheduled for this month. So, you know, no really loss there. But it's Anthony Lionheart Smith going up against Glover Teixeira. Let me see where they are in the rankings right now. Glover is number 8 and Anthony Smith's number 3. Wow. Anthony Smith coming off of beating a man half to death for breaking into his house.
Yeah.
Did you see him and John go back and forth with that?
No.
John was like, oh, well, props to Anthony, but, you know, if someone broke into my house, they wouldn't be leaving alive. And then Anthony was like, you know, at first when I was reading that, I was like, man, thanks, John. That's a pretty cool thing to say. And then I got to the end of the tweet and I realized he's just a douchebag. I was like, yeah, he did really make that all about himself there, didn't he?
Yeah. That's some John Jones shit right there.
Yeah.
Anyways, looking at the tail of the tape on this one, Anthony Lionheart Smith is 9 years younger than Glover Teixeira. He's also 2 inches taller and will have – oh, both of these guys have a 76-inch reach. Who'd they fight recently, Slim?
Glover Teixeira recently – oh, wow, they were both in a in that Quintet Ultra grappling match thing.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get to watch that. But Glover's actually on a 3-fight win streak right now. He beat Baby K, Carl Robertson, Ion Kuntalaba, and Nikita Krylov. Two of those by submission finish. Anthony Smith, however, coming off that win over Alexander Gustafsson back in June of last year, which shocked the world, sent Alexander in, into retirement and all that shit. Like, what?
Yeah.
Wow.
So looking at how these guys get it done, of his 33 victories, Anthony Lionheart Smith has only had 2 decision victories. The rest of those wins have been by stoppage. The man is an animal. On the other hand, 25 stoppage victories out of 30 wins for Glover Teixeira. So I'm not expecting this one to go all 5 rounds. I'm letting you know that right now. Obviously, Glover Teixeira is dangerous on the ground. He has never been submitted. I don't think Anthony Smith is going to be able to lock up any submissions in this one. No. This one's going to be on the feet if he wants to win. Glover, obviously, he has that crazy power. He has a 56% knockout rate. But I don't know if he still has that pop in his fist like he used to, especially against somebody like Anthony Smith, who moves pretty good for the light heavyweight division. But other than that, Anthony Smith, of all the 9 stats that I typically pick my fights on and give you guys, significant strikes landed per minute, significant striking accuracy, how many they absorb per minute, their striking defense, strike differential, and then grappling wise, takedown average, takedown accuracy, takedown defense, submissions attempted per 15 minutes, all but one, which is significant striking accuracy. And that's not by much. Go in favor of Glover Teixeira in this one.
Wow.
And that's, you know, that's crazy to me. But, you know, Glover Teixeira, man, as old as he's getting up there in age, that man's still a 2nd degree Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, a 7th degree Kajukenbo black belt, and a Luta Livre black belt. He's just dangerous. Wherever he goes, he's got that power, and he can submit you. So I just think Anthony Smith really needs to play this one safe. I'm going to pick him in this one, but man, Glover Teixeira, I promised after I watched him get knocked out by Rumble Johnson that I'd never pick him again. But yeah, I'm going with Anthony Smith in this one.
I want to use some crazy, like, MMA math. Oh, well, Glover got beat up by Alexander Gustafsson, and Anthony Smith beat Alexander Gustafsson, so, like, you know, that means, but that's bit me in the butt in the past. However, I do think Anthony Smith is one of the best light heavyweights in the world right now, and I'm going to go with him.
ANA MMA going to agree on the main event. We're both going with Anthony Lionheart Smith to win the main event.
Yeah.
So just want to run over our picks real quick. We're going to disagree on the first fight of the night in the heavyweight division. I'm going with the Vanilla Gorilla, Chase Sherman. Slim's going with Isaac Villanueva. In the second fight of the night, bantamweight division, another disagreement. I'm picking Hunter Azor while Slim's going with Brian Boom Kelleher. We both agreed in the lightweight division picking Omar Morales to defeat Gabriel Benitez. We both picked Sajara Eubanks, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the women's bantamweight division, we both picked Sajara Eubanks to defeat Sarah Morris. In the lightweight division, we both picked Michael Johnson to defeat Thiago Moises. In the heavyweight division, we both picked Felipe Lins to defeat Andrei Arlovsky. In the middleweight division, I thought we had four. We should have four disagreements, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Sherman and Villanueva, Azor and Kelleher, Rothwell and St. Preux.
I picked Ray Borg.
Marvin. Oh, you picked Ray Borg?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, my bad. I was tripping. So where was I? Heavyweight division, we both went Felipe Lins to defeat Andrei Arlovsky. That's your preliminary card. On the main card, we both picked the Italian Dream, Marvin Vettori, to defeat Baby K, Carl Robertson. We had another disagreement, our third of the night. Slim picked Ray Borg. I picked Ricky Simone. In the lightweight division, we're both taking Alexander Hernandez to defeat Never Sober Drew Dober. In the heavyweight division.
What if he's really like a drug addict?
He's not. That makes it funny. Yeah.
Makes and it then, not funny.
Our last disagreement of the night in the heavyweight division. Slim's going with OSP, Ovince St. Preux. I'm going with Big Ben Rothwell. And in the main event of the evening in the light heavyweight division, we're both picking Lionheart, Anthony Smith, to defeat Glover Teixeira. That was our preview for UFC on ESPN 9.
Oh, yeah, baby.
We'll be back Thursday or Friday to give you guys the review recap on this card, let you know how we did on our DraftKings, all that fun stuff, update you guys on the deficit. I'll get you the updated records Wednesday. And then, yeah, after that, we'll go over that card and then preview the UFC on ESPN Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris card.
That card got pretty stacked pretty quick.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. So a lot to look forward here. Stay with us, you know, spread the podcast as much as you guys can, especially in times like this. People need some entertainment. Don't be afraid to post a little pic of your favorite guys talking about shit.
We out here.
But other than that, I just need to give a big shout out to my cat Spyro, man. Dude's handsome, beautiful, cute, stinky breath.
Fix that.
He's got beautiful teeth. I just don't know why his little breath he stinks.
Give him a chew toy.
We're changing his, we're changing his diet.
One of them bone things.
Cats don't chew on bones, buddy. I'll give him a bone. I don't think he'll be interested in it, though.
Cats don't like bones.
I mean, they'll like maybe try to eat them, but I don't think they like playing with them like dogs, like just like gnawing on them, you know.
The bones. You ever see their cat
running around the bone, bro? Like maybe like a fish skeleton they'd fuck with.
Like an alley cat. Yeah. Which is basically what he is.
Pretty much.
That man's seen some things. But,
I seen some things, man.
Wouldn't recommend it.
But all right, guys, we'll catch you here in a couple of days. Let you know the results. I gotta go buy some groceries. I'm gonna get the fuck out of here.
Later.